This is a Squiz podcast. We're your shortcut to being informed.
Hi, it's Claire Kimball here, founder of The Squiz. One of the things that you've told us time and time again is that you appreciate how we do the news, but also appreciate the fun and the quirky bits and pieces too. So I wanted to let you know that we have a weekly newsletter called The Saturday Squiz. It's the week in news, but it also has recommendations of great recipes, books, TV shows, podcasts, and so much more. So grab your phone, go on, and head to thesquiz.com.au to sign up. We're the shortcut to the news and so much more. That link is also in your episode notes.
We're coming up to Easter this weekend, and so for the season of chocolate, we thought we'd take shortcuts off the beaten track and look at the world behind chocolate production. Where does that chocolate come from? And why are chocolate prices all of a sudden going up? Squiz Shortcuts is your backstory to the big news stories. I'm Alex Tai.
And I'm Siobhan Moran McFarlane.
Siobhan, how good is chocolate?
Oh my God, Alex, it's the best.
Well, now that we've got that out of the way, we should also say that Australians agree we eat 5 kilograms of chocolate per person each year, which is a lot of little Easter eggs all adding up.
And I am definitely bringing up that average for other people, Alex. I would not like to think how much I eat in a year, but even if you're not a chocoholic and think 5 kilograms sounds like a lot, we're not even close to being the biggest chocolate eaters in the world. That is probably unsurprisingly the Swiss, who eat around 11 kilograms each per year. Maybe I am Swiss, Alex.
Good problem to have. So we all know chocolate is great, obviously, but we often don't think about where it comes from, or rather where the main ingredient, cocoa, comes from.
Yeah, the main ingredient in chocolate, the thing that makes it chocolate, is, as you say, cocoa, which comes from cocoa beans. And a quick bit of history, cocoa trees come from the Amazon rainforest, but are now grown around the world.
And because they are originally a rainforest plant, they need to grow relatively close to the equator. And what that means is that now 4 of the top producing cocoa bean countries in the world are located in the west of Africa. They are the Ivory Coast, Ghana, Nigeria, and Cameroon.
And together those countries make up more than 70% of the world's cocoa bean production, particularly the Ivory Coast. And that concentration of agriculture is pretty important because it means that whatever happens in those countries, it does have a real impact on global cocoa bean production.
Which is a bit of a hint as to what is coming next, because cocoa production has hit a real rough patch in the last couple of years.
So this sounds like it could be the same story that we've heard time and time again about COVID interrupting supply chains and causing shortages. But that is not what has happened in the case of cocoa, Alex.
No, this is a way more basic story, and it has to do with the weather. Cocoa trees need to grow close to the equator, as we said, because they need really stable, hot weather conditions. But that is not what the west of Africa has had in recent years.
No, climate change has been blamed for disrupting the normal weather conditions around the west of Africa and those key cocoa-producing countries. Last year, above-average rainfall meant that cocoa plants in the area were more susceptible to fungal black pod disease in all that soggy weather.
And as a result of that disease and some others that are accelerated by the wet weather, farmers in Ghana and the Ivory Coast lost significant portions of their crops. And Siobhan, it is not about to get better next year.
No, and that's because the El Niño weather pattern is predicted to bring dry weather to that part of the world. And while rain was an issue for the crops, dry weather is also a big problem for cocoa farmers because crop yields typically fall during particularly dry periods.
Yes, these are picky crops, and we are already seeing the impacts of the bad weather on cocoa prices on the world market, which are at an all-time high. For example, compared to this time last year, a ton of cocoa costs 150% more. That is double the price and then half that original price again.
And we've also started to see some reports just in the last month that cocoa processing plants in Africa have started to run well below normal levels. And at the same time, global chocolate makers have started to jack up their prices and warn about a reduction in profits.
It is a strange, strange time on the cocoa markets. And that is not even the full story. More coming up next.
This week, our podcast is brought to you by Aware Super. Regardless of whether retirement is 2 or 20 years away, Aware Super can help you get a plan in place to live your best retirement. Visit aware.com.au to find out more.
So we've heard that the cocoa bean market is in a rough patch as bad weather has wreaked havoc on crops and caused the price of cocoa and the price of chocolate to shoot up. But Siobhan, we'd be missing a big part of the cocoa story if we didn't talk about the people farming cocoa.
That's right. And the thing to know here is that for the most part, cocoa farming is a relatively small enterprise consisting of lots of small farms. But a lot of those farms have a dark side.
Yes, exactly. Since 1998, there have been allegations of child slavery being used in cocoa production. And by the 2000s, those allegations turned into documentaries showing clear use of children in cocoa farming.
So that was a big talking point at the time, and people actually started trying to do something about it. In 2001, two US politicians worked with the major chocolate companies to set a target to end the, and this is the quote, worst forms of child labour by 2005. That was known as the Harkin-Engel Protocol, named after Senator Tom Harkin and Congressman Elliot Engel. But 2005 came and went, and that goal was not reached.
And this is a bit of a disappointing episode because that target kept being pushed back, first to 2008, then 2010, then 2015, then to 2020.
And at the same time, the target was changed to reduce child labour in Ghana and the Ivory Coast by 70%. And I don't know what to say, except that target has also not been met. So it's a real ongoing issue, even today, Alex.
So that is the depresso part of the episode. We've heard that cocoa bean farming involves child slavery and is on the decline generally because of climate change. So let's pivot now to look at what could be done about these two major problems.
So on the issue of the sustainability of cocoa farming, the chocolate industry does know that this is a huge problem. And one solution that's been floated is to change cocoa farming from, and get ready for some big words, Alex, a monocropping practice towards what's known as agroforestry.
Right, so we should definitely unpack that. Monocropping sees a lot of the cocoa bean farmers clear out their land to plant only cocoa bean crops. But agroforestry is the process where those cocoa trees would be planted alongside other beneficial trees and crops, which would help to improve soil fertility and reduce disease.
And that would mean that cocoa trees can continue to be farmed well into the future. As for the issue of slavery, that's one that the industry is also aware of. And the suggestion from anti-slavery activists is that the big handful of global chocolate companies simply decide to pay the farmers more money so they have less of a reason to use cheaper child labour.
And Siobhan, you mentioned the handful of global chocolate companies. It is an important part of this story to note that the industry is consolidated around 5 major companies that make most of the chocolate for the world.
Exactly. And some of the names will be familiar, some probably not so much. So there's Mars, Hershey, Nestle, Ferrero, and then Mondelez, which owns Cadbury and Toblerone. So those companies do have a lot of control over how chocolate is sourced and produced. But apart from the companies changing their behaviour, us consumers can also look for certification labels like Fair Trade that try to ensure cocoa farmers are getting a better deal on their product.
Yes, that is something we can do as chocolate eaters. And those certification labels don't guarantee there's no child labour in our chocolate, but they do try to make it less likely. And stick around for a recommendation on one company that is doing its best to avoid child labour in its chocolate altogether. But for now, that is your shortcut to the global chocolate industry. Each week on the podcast, we like to suggest further reading, watching, or listening on the topic. And this week, we have a watching recommendation for you. John Oliver from Last Week Tonight, he has also done his own segment on chocolate from a couple of months ago. It covers a lot of the same stuff, but I have to say, Siobhan, his jokes are very good. They're better than ours.
Oh, I think you're playing us down a bit there, Alex, but yeah, probably right. And I've got an eating recommendation. Mm. So as you alluded to earlier, there are a few companies who are trying to do better. One of them is called Tony's Chocolony. It's a Dutch brand that was started by a journalist called Toon van der Kerken. His surname translates to "of the kitchen," by the way, so very appropriate. He was looking into child labour in the chocolate industry, and then he wanted to prove that he could make delicious, profitable chocolate without child labour. So we reckon it's worth giving a go. You can find it a lot in shops and supermarkets now. I've seen it around a fair bit. It is a bit exy, let's be honest, but at least you know why you're paying a bit more. And it means you can enjoy your chocolate guilt-free.
Sounds good to me. We'll have links to both of those recommendations in the show notes. Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, please tell people about the podcast. And if you have any requests, you can send them through to hello@thesquiz.com.au.
Yeah, we've had a few emails actually, Alex. So I just wanted to shout out Alex, who's asked for one about Uber versus the taxis in Australia. And we've also had one from Adelie, I hope I've pronounced that right, who's asked us to do a shortcut on Plutus Payroll, which I have to say is not something that I'm really familiar with, but we're definitely considering those episodes. And when there's a timely moment, we will try and do them. So if anyone else has got some suggestions, please do send them in.
Yes, please do. We love to hear from you. That's all for us today. Until next time.
Hi there, it's Bryce Corbett here from Squiz Kids. It's been a big couple of weeks for news, and one thing that's emerged is the increasingly concerning role that mis- and disinformation are playing in the wake of big news events. It's why there's never been a more important time for our kids to be taught to be critical consumers of media. It's also why we created NewsHounds, a fun 8-part podcast series with accompanying classroom workbook to teach primary school kids how to spot misinformation when they come across it online. It's already being used in over 2,000 classrooms around the country. To make sure the kids in your life are among them, get their teacher to head to squizkids.com.au and sign up for a free account. You're very welcome.